Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're in the place where mysteries and the missing meet. Where conspiracies lurk around every corner. Welcome to the Deep Dark Truth.
Hello, friends. I currently sound like this, so we have not recorded in the last several weeks, as I have sounded like this for 2 weeks now, but we still wanted to get something out there for you. So this is an episode that we recorded last October on Lizzie Borden that was a Patreon exclusive episode. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome, patrons, to this month's Patreon exclusive episode on Lizzie Borden. They know who I am, right?
I certainly hope they know which one is Mo, which one is Chip, which one is the hot one.
So thank you for being a patron. Today, Mikey is going to be leading us in an episode on Lizzie Borden.
All right, so I'm going to dive right in. I'm sure everyone has already heard about this, hopefully.
Everybody knows the nursery rhyme, at least, of Lizzie Borden. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her father 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her mother 41. I think that's how it goes.
Correct.
I could be
that is
loving
it.
Okay, cool. Cool, cool.
Yep. Ring on. All right, so Lizzie Andrew Borden was born in 1860 in Fall River, Massachusetts. Yes, her middle name was Andrew, which I thought was super interesting. Andrew, Andy, Andrea, Andrea. Origin means strong and manly, so it's not typically used.
Was her father or like grandfather somebody named Andrew?
Yes. So her father's name was Andrew, so I assume that's how she got her middle name. Look, we're already off on a tangent.
Okay, but now I want to discuss baby naming politics.
I think other people also had the same question because it's, especially for the time period, it's
same.
It's very like, wait, what? So my guesses were mother's maiden name and or father's name. So continue.
Lizzie, as she would go by, or Lizbeth, would be born to Sarah Anthony Borden and Andrew Jackson Borden. So Anthony was her mom's middle name. So I'm assuming it was a thing that her mom's side did, would take the father, because I did more research and Anthony was her father's name.
Makes sense.
So seems to be a thing. And then she had only one sister who was older than her, which is Emma Lenora Borden. And which is also weird because I thought if the oldest daughter would do that,
yeah,
not the youngest daughter. But anywho, her father's name was Anthony, so perhaps it was common for their daughter to take their father's name. Her father would grow up fairly wealthy despite his own financial struggles in early adulthood. He would eventually become successful in the manufacturing of various furniture and caskets. Bum, bum, bum.
Interesting.
As well as prominent, like, property development. So he became kind of like a real estate kind of guy as well. Like, he would own several textile mills and considerable amount of commercial property. He was president of the Union Savings Bank. And at his death, his worth and estate would be over $300,000, which in 2020 is the equivalent to $9 million.
At no point, whenever I've heard the story, I've always pictured Lizzie, them living in like a farmhouse,
right,
never having money.
Her doing it in a nightgown?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, very that. Cabin in the woods?
Yeah.
Totally. Totally. Nope. So most of Andrew's family lived in The Hill, which was like a prestigious and fashionable neighborhood in Fall River, Massachusetts. And this was like less diverse racially and ethnically and social status and economically than where they lived in that same city, if that makes any sense. It was like a little Stepford Wives bubble fucking white America. So, however, Andrew and his family did not. They would reside in an industrial area of Fall River. He was well known for being like super frugal and even refused to have indoor plumbing in their home, which was fairly common.
This is now making sense.
You'll find out. But they only had one maid, which from someone with his kind of money and estate, a middle class family is kind of weird to only just have like one maid. Like with his amount of money, all they had was one maid.
This is completely shaking the foundation of everything I thought I knew about this story, because
yeah, it's so interesting.
I remember hearing that Lizzie and her sister and whatever were supposed to be doing like chores in the barn or something. And now I'm like, rich people, chores in the barn? They have a maid. I'm very confused, but I will let you continue.
It'll all kind of come together. But so they had a quite religious upbringing, and the family attended Central Congregational Church. And this would play a huge role in Lizzie's development in life. And she was extremely involved with the church from early childhood and would eventually teach like Sunday school to immigrants that recently came over to the United States. So I think that's kind of where his mindset was. They did have a lot of chores all the time, and they did take care of like the estate and the farm.
So like piety and frugalness. And he saw the wealth as a secondary thing to how they should be living.
Right.
Idle hands, devil's playground.
Mm-hmm.
She would become the secretary treasurer of the Christian Endeavor Society and was an integral part in the Women's Christian Temperance Union.
Remind me what year we're in?
1860, she was born. She was also a member of the Ladies Fruit and Flower Mission. Just a little background, the Women's Christian Temperance Union is still active today and focuses on women's suffrage and missionary work. At only 39, her mother would die from uterine congestion and spinal disease in 1863.
What the fuck is uterine congestion?
Thank you for saying it for me.
I think it's the inability to pee.
What?
That's not where the uterus is.
That doesn't mean that's not what they called it, though. Pelvic congestion syndrome, a condition that causes chronic pelvic pain, thought to be caused by problems in the veins in the pelvic area, veins and blood vessels that carry back to the heart. In some women, veins in the lower abdomen may stop working well. Blood may start to build inside the veins. When this happens, the veins in your pelvis can enlarge and change shape like varicose veins. Blah, blah, blah. That is from cedarssinai.org.
I don't want my veins to hurt.
Ouchie, either way. Her mom died at a young age. She was young. I think she was only 3 years old when this happened. And the mother wax nursery rhyme debunked. She didn't kill her mother.
That was easy.
3 years after her death, her father would marry Abby Durrell Gray. At 6 years old, she basically had a stepmother.
Did she whack her stepmother?
We'll get there.
That's a
research
yes.
has shown through testaments by Lizzie that she called Abby Mrs. Borden, and they had less than a cordial relationship, that they didn't have a very warm relationship. She believed she married her father for wealth, and she even testified that and said that, and that was widely known. Maggie, their 25-year-old live-in maid, would testify that the daughters rarely even ate meals with their parents. Andrew would gift several pieces of real estate to Abby's family, as well as buy her stepsister a house. This would enrage both daughters, obviously.
No shit.
Coming into fruition in your teenage years, learning all this and learning about your mother dying and, you know, whatever. I mean, she was three, so she probably remembers a little bit, maybe tiny bit, but just coming to terms with everything, they were pretty upset. They would demand and receive their original house and property, a house that they grew up in that their mother had died in, but they had to purchase it from them for a dollar.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine.
Never mind.
So what was the turnaround event? Historians would pinpoint a few things. The first one is that in May of 1892, so we're fast forwarding, you know, almost 30 years. She's around 21, 22. Andrew, her father, decided to take a hatchet. Bum, bum, bum.
To the corner store.
Every time you bum, 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 it gets less ominous.
I know, that's the whole point. So he took a hatchet and slayed multiple pigeons in their barn. And his reason for doing so was that he thought the birds were attracting local children to hunt them. And I'm assuming didn't want them hunting them or on their property or near their property, maybe. I have no idea.
How do you kill pigeons with a hatchet?
I tried to find a little more information on it, but it wasn't there.
They're already trapped. You don't need a hatchet. Or they're free and you can't use a hatchet.
It's easier to kill them with something like a hatchet or a knife because a birdshot, if you're going to eat them, you have to get all the birdshot out. There's like a shit ton of little tiny...
I get that, but how do you hit them with a hatchet fast enough? They can fly.
Probably the same way you would do a chicken. You hold it and then you slit its throat and then you toss it.
Yeah.
And let it drain. Killing things with Mo. The fuck? Killing things with Mo, the Uper hillbilly.
So it's common knowledge, and I don't blame her. Lizzie was extremely upset over the senseless slaughter of their family's birds. It goes on to say that she was pretty attached to them. She recently, just a few, like a month or so ago, built them a roost, like herself.
This is a problem. My mom did this. My mom named the chicken. Do not name the chicken. Even if you're rich, even if whatever, in these times.
But this wasn't livestock. Like, you don't have pigeons for livestock.
Lots of people kill pigeons. People still kill pigeons. Did
they?
Yeah.
Interesting. It seemed like they were more pets from her perspective. I was just gathering that it seemed more of a malicious thing to get at her. And then the second point of, like, what the turnaround event was, just a few months after this, an incident, a family argument, would cue the sisters to take an extended vacation in the south coast of Massachusetts, known as New Bedford. Apparently there was like huge, you know, blow off the top kind of thing, and they literally were like, we're leaving. They would return to Fall River at the end of July. However, Lizzie would stay in a local rooming house in the city before returning to the state, like her sister Emma. It seemed to be it was about 4 days that she was there for. There's a lot of repetition about property and real estate and houses and things, and I'm assuming that this is where it's all fueled from.
Or it could just be general family tensions between the stepmom. I mean, it could have been a generalized family argument.
Especially if they never had a relationship and it's just been building over 20 years. Like, they didn't eat together. It was clear that there was a lot of tension. Before returning, the sisters would sell back the house that they purchased from their father to their father for $5,000, which is the equivalent in 2020 of $144,000.
So they bought it for a dollar and then sold it back?
This was before returning back to the house. So I'm assuming that they were basically like, kind of like, fuck you. We don't want anything to do with you. We just want to get money and like, be done with you. I have no idea, but that's just my assumption from the very little that they offer.
We keep giving our stepmother's family shit. We want our $144,000. Right.
So on August 3rd, their uncle John Morse, which was their original mother's brother, Sarah's brother, would be invited to the estate to stay and discuss business matters with Andrew. Historians and writers would assume that this conversation was specifically about property transfer and would throw more fuel to the fire that was already a tense family situation.
Okay, so let me get this straight. The dad has the girls buy the house for a dollar. The girls are done with him at a certain point and are like, you just keep giving away shit for free to these people that you married into and they just want your money. Has the dad buy back the house, and then the dad possibly approaches his former brother-in-law to buy that house.
Right. So, well, they returned back at the end of July, and they sold the house before they returned. And he was invited on August 3rd.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if the deal was completely settled by that time, but he would sleep in the estate's guest room, basically, when he was there. Interestingly enough, for a few days prior to this visit, the entire house was violently ill, meaning the maid, Andrew, and Sarah, as well as, I think, Lizzie and Emma, but I'm not sure. I never got, like, real confirmation on it. It just said the household. It's always the house, the household, whatever. So a family friend had speculated that mutton had been left out and used for several meals, and that maybe that was the culprit.
Or somebody was trying to poison someone.
Abby believes that it was poison and that Andrew is not a popular or well-liked man. Lizzie had even testified that her father's business dealings and discourteous manner made her scared for her life or unsafe. From a lot of the stuff that I had gathered, he just seemed like he was not a very courteous or kind man. He was just...
Are you saying the rich man isn't nice?
I was just going to say, people don't really get rich by being nice unless their whole bag is being nice.
1860s, white religious man that has money, I think he was probably a fucking asshole. Let's be real. Let's honestly be real. He was probably a dirtbag, treated women like shit.
It feels like a safe bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a safe bet. So on August 4th, which was the next day after their Uncle John had showed up, the family would all sit down and have breakfast. And this was pretty early in the morning. I was guessing about 7, 8 o'clock because they have time out events that start around 9. So it was sometime before that. So both daughters, Andrew, Abby, Uncle John, and Maggie were all present at breakfast, all 6 of them. And Andrew and John would sit in the sitting room for about an hour after breakfast to discuss, you know, further matters at hand or tie up loose ends or whatever that they had to do. Uncle John would leave at 8:40 a.m. to buy a pair of oxen and visit a different niece that was in town in River Fall and planned on returning back around noon for lunch. Andrew would leave just after 9 a.m. to go for his, like, normal routine morning walk that he went to, like, did after breakfast. Despite it being Emma and Lizzie's regular chores to clean the guest bedroom, Abby, between 9 and 10:30 a.m., went up there to make the bed, so the stepmom. Abby would later be found hunched over, face down on the ground, and clearly dead. Forensic evidence would state that she was facing her attacker when she was struck by a hatchet, and then from the blow, kind of turned around full circle and landed backwards, face first. And this would cause, you know, several contusions and bruising on her nose and forehead. And then her killer would strike her 17 times in the back of the head with a hatchet.
Wow.
So also debunk on the 41 wax. We'll get to the real number. So it's technically 18 because she struck her in the side of the head first. Above the ears where she hit her at first. Not she, but somebody.
I was just going to say, I'm a Lizzie Borden conspiracy theorist, and we'll see if that still pans out by the end of this episode.
All right. So Andrew would return around 10:30, but not without some delay. He would arrive to find that his key would not work on the front door.
But was he delayed, though? But was he? I'm just saying.
Was he or not?
I hope we find out.
He then knocked for attention. Maggie would arrive at the door and find that it was jammed. And they say, cry an expletive, which means she was like, fuck, because the door was jammed.
You piece of shit door.
And she couldn't get it open. And then finally, you know, after cussing.
It was probably like, God damn it. That's probably really what it was.
It's probably what it was. It probably was, God damn it.
Oh, my Lord.
And so she would eventually get it open. And then she would later testify in court that she heard Lizzie laughing from atop the stairs as this was taking place.
I mean, my asshole dad is stuck outside his rich door. Suck a dick. Can't even make a door work.
This is very important because at this time, Abby was already dead, and anyone on the second floor would have seen the body. So kind of just remember that or put that in your head. Lizzie would deny being upstairs and testified that her father had asked where Abby was and that she replied, a messenger delivered a summons to her to go visit a sick friend. She would also testify that she had removed Andrew's boots and helped him into slippers before he lay down on the sofa for a nap. So keep those in just in the back of your head. She would then tell Maggie that there was a department store sale and permitted to go to it, but Maggie was not feeling well and went to go lie down in her bedroom. So this was kind of like in between beforehand. Nobody had went upstairs, so nobody had known about it, if that makes any sense. But the weird thing is, Maggie would testify that she was in her third floor bedroom resting at around 11:10 when Lizzie would yell down the stairs, Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Somebody came in and killed him. I want to like see the layouts of the house and I tried to find information. Do you have to go to the second floor to get to the third floor?
I want
to
know. Because
sometimes the servant's chamber might be in the attic or in some weird offshoot or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, or maybe there's two different staircases. My uncle once lived in a house that had a servant staircase, and that servant staircase was like in a different place than the normal staircase, and the servant staircase went straight up to the third floor.
Right, which is kind of common. So Dr. Bowen, the family doctor, would come from across the street and determine that both victims were dead.
Thanks, bud.
Andrew was slumped on a couch and was struck 10 to 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon. Detectives would estimate time of death at 11 a.m. He was sleeping when it happened because one of his eyeballs was cleanly severed in two.
Yikes.
I don't know how that proves he's asleep, but
I'm sure that it went through his eyelid, and so they could tell that his eye was shut.
Mm-hmm. I think they also would think that if somebody goes to raise against you and you're looking straight at them, that you would do some type of movement back or like blockage or whatever, but it was like cleanly cut in half.
You feel like you could get enough force kind of from behind them in some capacity, but eh.
And it, yeah, and I think it was also a combination of the body didn't move. It was not moved from the time of the attack till the end of the attack. Like, it was multiple things, but, like, that was just something that was mentioned that I just, you know, had to mention because it's fucking...
wild. Yeah.
So what do you guys think happened?
I really want the layout of the second floor. Because didn't you say the mother was killed in a bedroom?
Yeah.
Where's John? Where's Emma?
All I know is that the uncle is sus because the timing of it is just... all these tensions, these family tensions for years and years and years and years, but then the uncle comes to visit.
And that's the day it goes down.
It's also suspect that they sold the house back and they moved away for a while, and then the moment they came back, two people are murdered. Like, I mean, come on. There's a lot going on. It could be freaking anything. We'll get more into it too, but let's then hear about the investigation and all that stuff. So, what became of the investigation? Lizzie would be interrogated and questioned about the bizarre murders, obviously. Her answers were very strange, lacking in logical sense, and extremely contradictory. And this is all from, like, kind of, like, the detective's perspective.
And probably it is, but there's also this thing about men in the old days and in the new being like, she was hysterical. She didn't make any sense whatsoever. And she's like, my uncle killed my dad.
We've literally just watched this happen with the Gabby Petito case. With the body cam footage of she is hysterical, you know, at which implies some sort of guilt that she must be the aggressor.
Right. Now think about how bad it was in 1860 and how bad men treated women. They were...
So without a transcript, I'm throwing this evidence out. This means meaningless.
So she initially reported hearing a groan, then sometimes it was scraping noises and even a distress call before entering the house. And then 2 hours later, her story would change, and she hadn't even heard or witnessed anything out of place before entering the house. So that's kind of why they deduced that she was all over the place.
It's so hard to cast judgment simply because it could have been, oh, you didn't hear anything? You didn't hear a single thing? Well, maybe I heard like a groan or like something. Like, maybe.
What if you didn't do it, though, and you did come home to them, your parents murdered? You're going to be all over the fucking place.
I think that we could probably say with some certainty that she didn't care much about her stepmother.
True, but it's still traumatizing to see somebody hatch it.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's still like her dad and her stepmother still had a hand in raising her, even if they didn't get along. And so it's still...
I'd be traumatized if I saw a stranger like that, though. Like, you know what I mean?
Even a person I hate. No, it's like, Jesus fucking Christ.
This is a... this is a murder scene for sure. I want to also know when they found Abby in correlation. Like, was it him first and then they went? Who found Abby? Did the maid? Did...
Well, apparently she's out in the open and also very easy to miss.
Did they wait for the doctor to get there and then they all kind of discovered it?
Somebody killed dad and then it could have become like, we're trying to tell everyone, is there anybody else upstairs? Oh, no.
Where's stepmommy?
Right. Yeah, it just could have been like searching the house and the yard to find everyone to inform them about what's going on.
Right. So when prompted about her stepmother, interestingly enough, she would say that she had a note to visit a sick friend and that she had thought she had returned. She was probably upstairs and that somebody should go look for her. End quote.
Wait, so...
Like, that's exactly what she said.
Now I really need the timing, police folk.
Officers would report that they didn't like her disposition. Ugh. She was too calm. She was too poised. Despite her changing alibis and her weird and calm demeanor, police would not investigate her or her body in any shape or form.
Patrons, please just imagine my face right now. And how annoyed I am. She's too calm. But she was hysterical.
I'm just so biased. I am so calm. I have been with so many people
dying.
Well,
they never said that she was hysterical. They just said that she was, her answers were strange. They didn't make logical sense. That she was extremely contradictory. That she was too calm and too poised.
There's also a thing is shock, too. People get very calm during shock. But then other people like me that have any kind of job dealing with people dying, shut everything down until whatever is dealt with that needs to be dealt with. And then you turn it back on.
Business mode. And then, panic.
Yeah.
So they did search her room, but even on trial, they openly admit that they didn't go through a thorough search. Like, the police officers openly admitted on trial that they just did, like, a glance through, search the room kind of thing.
A hatchet in here? Nope. Okay, moving
and
on.
And to this day, that is the biggest criticism of this entire thing, is that the police didn't do anything initially, like, didn't do a thorough investigation or...
Yeah, it would have been, everyone should be split up, everyone is interviewed separately, the entire house is combed while everybody waits outside, a police officer is mm-hmm. outside interviewing somebody while another police officer is going through the shit.
Right, yeah. And this isn't a modern standard. They understood how to hide a body and things back then.
Yeah, there is right. a foundation for our justice system that predates this case.
So they knew to yeah. do this, and they did.
So they did find something, however. They did find one, well, not one thing, but they found in the basement two hatchets, two axes, and a broken hatchet hand and handle.
Were they bloody? Because it seems like he was just chopping up pigeons.
This was suspected to be the murder weapon, as the break seemed fresh, and a pile of ash and dust on the top appeared to have been placed there in comparison to the other ones that, like, looked like a natural dust to them, is supposedly what they, like, reported.
That's yeah. fake. That's ridiculous.
This will send them off the scent.
If not, that is the most diabolical shit, and I stan. If you have...
I mean, I would think about shit like that, but I don't know that I would do it in such a
attention
way
to detail.
You'd be able to notice. Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're going to come up with that concept...
If you're
you
going to come up with that
right.
concept, you're going to take the murder weapon, and you're going to put it somewhere in the woods and bury it. You're not going to leave it in the home if you're willing to create fake dust.
If you think about this... In just 2 hours, they were both murdered. So someone murdered the shit out of them, got blood all over them, cleaned up and changed, played house, talked to people, had conversations, came back, killed somebody else with a fucking hatchet, got bloody again, changed the clothes, cleaned up, and walked through the door and pretended like they didn't know anything was going on.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
But the hatchet was clean. It wasn't bloody and dusty.
How far apart were the parents killed from each other?
They estimate that she went upstairs from 9 to 10:30. They don't know. And his time of death was estimated at 11 a.m.
I mean, so it's possible that... Oh, gosh. So he was there the whole morning, right?
He was out on a walk.
So maybe it was like, kill her, he came home, fell asleep on the couch, and then that one was opportunity. Or yeah. he was sleeping and it was kill him really quick. And he makes no noise because he's sleeping, and then go upstairs and kill her.
The biggest takeaway from this is that none of these axes are removed from the house. Nothing is taken from the house.
But you think that they would at least take it to hold it up in court and be like, this is the murder weapon.
They don't need to be motivated by fingerprints.
Honestly, they could get any axe and be like, they were murdered with an axe just like this one. Like, same effect.
Both bodies would be tested for poison because of the household sickness, but none were found.
Oh, okay.
They go in description about opening up their bellies, stomachs, and finding milk. And residents would testify that Lizzie had tried to purchase hydrocyanic acid from a local drugstore, and that was why the household became ill.
I'd like to know what common uses of this thing are.
She would deny and say that she wanted to buy it to clean her furs. A local medical examiner would testify that the acid had no purpose for cleaning and contained no antiseptic properties whatsoever. I mean, we're talking about, like, cyanide.
Are we literally talking about cyanide? Because things have fancy names.
It's a solution of hydrogen cyanide that has been put in water. Like, it's a mix of, like, water and...
Okay. Yeah. Diluted.
It is the cyanide right. we think of in the way we think of it.
Right.
Right. She was denied this, just so everybody knows, because she didn't have a prescription for it.
Oh, so it's all neutral. And,
I mean, you could get a script for anything in the 1800s. You want a shit ton of morphine, I'll get that for you.
We'll get to that, but that she was denied. And she tried to purchase a day before she came back to the estate.
I mean, she failed to purchase it. We didn't, and we didn't find it in her possession.
She might have found somebody else to purchase it from, though.
I'm the 17-year-old outside the 7-Eleven.
Alice Russell, a close friend to both sisters, would stay the night of the murder, obviously to just keep them company and, you know, make sure they're okay and yada yada. Officers were stationed all around the estate. Uncle John would stay in the attic guest room. There was talks and hearsay and things passed down that he stayed in the guest room where she was murdered. But from what I gather, that was just an added little thing that people are adding to the pile.
It's just so messy.
Officers seen and reported that Alice and Elizabeth had entered the cellar with only a torch lamp and a slop pail. However, Lizzie would return alone and appeared to have been washing things in a sink or hunched over a sink, but they couldn't really tell from where they were at. The next day, police would escort John back to the house from a mob of people because Uncle John tried to leave and, you know, couldn't get out, was being questioned and harassed, and police had to escort him back into the house.
It's sus.
Well, he was probably leaving because his business deal.
But still, those are his nieces. Those are his dead sister's children that have just...
I don't think he was leaving to, like, leave.
Leaving the house?
Okay. Leaving the house.
Go buy some cyanide right now.
It does feel a little like Uncle John might have pulled some strings to have it not fall on him.
The police would have warrants and whatever and conduct more search on the house the next day. Confiscated the broken hatchet and inspected both daughters' rooms and clothing and everything else. The mayor and police would later that day come and inform Lizzie that she was the prime suspect in the murder of their parents. The following morning, Alice would come into the kitchen to find Lizzie tearing up a dress. Lizzie explained that she was going to shred it and burn it, that it was covered in paint and she couldn't get it out. To this day, it was never determined if that was the dress she was wearing the day of the murders. Alice did, however, testify against her in court, witnessing her burning the dress.
Alice is the friend?
Alice is the friend that came to stay with
them. I'm making a list.
Andrew's the father. Abby is the stepmother. John is the uncle. Emma's the oldest daughter. Lizzie is the youngest daughter. Alice is the friend. Maggie is the housemaid.
Oh, what's the stepdaughter's name? The dad gave the stepdaughter a house for free.
Her stepsister.
Yeah.
Abby's stepsister. Yeah.
Oh.
Abby's stepsister.
Okay.
Which is two degrees of separation.
Okay, got it.
He bought her a house.
That's outrageous. I thought that it was the stepmom's daughter, but that's worse somehow.
Oh, the sister is Emma. Lizzie would go to hearing on August 8th without a family attorney because she was refused due to it being a private hearing. I have no idea what this means or what this entails, but it was somewhat of a preliminary private hearing.
That's sketch, but okay.
Our version of grand jury?
I have no idea. It was very strange for me to read. Her behavior and testimonies were reported as erratic. She refused to answer questions, even if it was meant to be in her favor. This was probably due to the fact that she was given regular doses of morphine the entire time to calm her down.
Well, there goes that.
You can't say that somebody is, like, emotionless and erratic when you are feeding them drugs to keep them
morphine.
Yeah.
Calm.
Morphine.
I don't know if she was on morphine for a few days since the murder and this was just a regular thing, or if they were dosing her during the hearing.
In any capacity.
I really don't know. Everything that I read kept coming to the fact that she was definitely high. There was definitely a lot going on.
It's possible that she was already on some amount of morphine before this, because everyone is on morphine.
She would claim that she was in three different places doing three different things when her father arrived at the estate, whether she was in the barn, whether she was in the house. She again said that she removed his boots when he was napping. And photographic evidence of the body, even today, shows him clearly wearing his shoes.
But also she's high on drugs during half of these tests.
She did claim that, though, in the original investigation in the first day as well. And so that's kind of why that they pinpoint that as being something big.
As far, that's the biggest suspicious one.
Yeah. She was arrested and jailed on August 11th. The district attorney was very aggressive and very confrontational throughout the trial, and this might have been something that helped her. in the long run. It would eventually be ruled at a preliminary testimony. It's not a full-blown trial yet. Regarding her innocence or guilt would be ruled admissible. Lizzie had bent to the whim of the attorney, kind of giving into his aggressive, just being super receptive. Friends of hers that long held her innocence would change her mind during the trial and after the trial and speak openly against her. The Boston Globe would write a 3-page extensive report, and it would get nationwide press. A grand jury took up a trial and began hearing evidence on November 7th, and she was indicted on December 2nd. Her trial began June 5th the next year. She had 2 prosecuting attorneys against her, one that would eventually go on to be the Supreme Court Justice,
Jesus.
Moody, and she would have 3 defense attorneys on her side, one who was the former governor of Massachusetts.
What a wild trial.
Isn't that crazy? The former governor of the state is her defense attorney in a murder case.
Extremely political on either side. Cannot trust motivations on either side.
Right.
Exactly. Or skill.
Exactly.
Yeah, cannot trust any kind of jury, really, to vote based on anything having to do with evidence and not, oh, I believe this person.
I mean, it's already all charisma. Even so to this day, it's charisma. But back then, it's even worse.
This is another bizarre twist that not a lot of people know. Just 5 days before the trial on June, another axe murder happened in Fall River.
I'm listening.
The similarities were striking, but it was later ruled that they were not connected at all, as it was done by immigrant Jose Correa de Mello, who was convicted and tried for the murder and was not even in Massachusetts at the time that the Bordens were murdered.
I'm suspicious of racism.
He wasn't in Massachusetts, I guess. He was an immigrant, so he had not gotten there
yet. I don't
think
he did the second one, the one that he was convicted of.
Oh, I'm fairly certain he probably didn't, but...
Which is a very easy way to say these aren't related, because this immigrant man did this one.
It also, the people weren't connected in any way, shape, or form. It seems like an open shut case against Lizzie, doesn't it? Well, the largest point in discussion of the trial was that the hatchet head that was found in the basement, which was not convincingly demonstrated by the prosecution.
Because it's fucking stupid. It's stupid.
Prosecutors argued that the killer had removed the handle because it had been covered in blood.
But the head hadn't!
Right. One officer testified that a hatchet handle was found near the hatchet head, but another officer contradicted his statement. Though no bloody clothing was found at the scene, Russell did testify on August 8th that she had witnessed her burning the dress in the kitchen stove, saying it had been ruined when she brushed against wet paint. During the course of the trial, defense never attempted to challenge that statement at all.
That's weird. That's very weird. It's one thing if they said, that never happened, and that's really strange that you would say that that happened. It's another thing to not try and contradict that statement. Why would you choose an oven?
Wondering if that's sort of normal at that time. Like, I need to make my oven work, and I've got fabric I want to burn.
If it's a wood stove... That would actually make a lot of sense.
Maybe.
I'm picturing like an oven, but if it's like a wood stove, burning whatever the fuck you want in the wood stove, that makes sense. You're burning your trash. There's places still in the country where people still are burning their trash.
So in the trial, this is where it gets weird too, because they didn't know where Lizzie was at the home at any point. There was a lot of back and forth. Maggie testified in her testimony that she entered the second floor of the home at around 10:58 a.m. and left Lizzie and her father downstairs.
Okay. I just don't know why they're like, anyone on the second floor will know there's a body here.
Abby should have been murdered on the second floor, and it said that like her body was visible from pretty much anywhere on the second floor. So if Maggie was down on the second floor and left her father and Lizzie downstairs, then why didn't she see the body then?
I don't have time to deal with this. I need a nap.
Lizzie would tell in her testimony that she went into the barn and was not in the house for 20 minutes or possibly a half an hour. Hyman Lubinsky, a neighbor, would testify for their defense and that he saw Lizzie Borden leaving the barn at 11:03 a.m. At 11:10 a.m., Lizzie called Maggie downstairs, told her father had been murdered, and ordered her not to enter the room. Instead, Borden sent her to go get the doctor. So that was kind of Maggie and Lizzie's testimony. If Lizzie was the murderer, why weren't her clothes soaked in blood? How did she clean up and change and have a 30-minute discussion with the maid before murdering her father and once again cleaning up and changing, right? That's where my thought process goes to.
But again, it's possible that the dad was sleeping. she killed the dad, then killed the stepmom because the dad wouldn't have made any noise to alert the stepmom. So the stepmom probably wouldn't have went first because she was probably screaming.
But also, like, if someone's getting fucking hatchet and I'm in a house, like, I'm going to hear that.
Even if they don't scream, I'm hearing a thunk, like, thunk, splat.
First of all, it's on a different floor. But then if it's, like, the bedroom that she's in is, like, down the hall, you hear all kinds of, like, house settling noises that you don't think anything of. You don't think somebody's getting hatcheted in the living room.
Well, maybe
you
do. I feel
like if Jonathan was upstairs and I was downstairs and I heard 17 whacks to a skull from a hatchet, I think I would hear that.
And the maniacal cackling.
And it's 1860. There's not a whole lot of media noise in the background.
My husband's probably hammering a table or X, Y, or Z or fixing this, or, you know, somebody's putting logs into the wood stove, or somebody's this. Like, it's so easy to explain away noises as long as no one's screaming. If somebody's screaming.
Oh, my husband's just killing pigeons in the bedroom again.
Yeah.
So both victims' heads had been removed during the autopsy and the skulls were admitted as evidence during the trial. They were presented on June 5th. Upon seeing them in the courtroom, Borden had fainted.
No shit!
Guilty, innocent, bystander.
Evidence was excluded and stripped from the record that Borden had sought to purchase the prussic acid, the hydrogen cyanide, purposely for cleaning a sealskin cloak from a local druggist that day before the murders. The judge ruled that the incident was too remote in time to have any type of connection or an attempt to murder.
And they weren't poisoned.
Yeah, that's not how they died. And, well, I mean, it could be, oh, originally this is how she was going to do it, but then they didn't sell it to her, and so that's how this happened. It could explain potential motive or premeditation. Eh.
This prosecutor is weak even for the time.
The presiding associate justice, Justin Dewey, who had been appointed by the former governor.
Who is her defense attorney? Great.
Correct. Delivered a lengthy summary that supported the defense at his charge of the jury before it was sent to deliberate on June 20th, 1893. After an hour and a half of deliberation, the jury acquitted Borden for the murders. Leaving the courthouse, she told reporters that she was the happiest woman in the world.
I mean, I get off from her.
So nonsensical. So weird.
It's weird. The Borden sisters would move into a large modern house in the hill that she would deem and call Maplecroft. She then started going by Lisbeth A. Borden. Contrary to her acquittal, Fall River Society would shun her completely. Because of Abby dying first, it was ruled that all her father's estates and wealth was turned over to the two daughters.
Yeah! I mean, what?
A considerable settlement did, however, go to Abby's family to settle claims against them. In 1905, she would throw a party for an actress friend, Nance O'Neill. And on this night, Emma and her would have an argument, and she would move out and never see Lisbeth again. So this is in 1905. This is just 12 years after the trial. She would live until 1927, so 22 years, Emma and her, and not seen each other or talked to her. She would die from pneumonia. She had her gallbladder removed a few months prior, and they don't know if that was part of the aspect too, but she would die from pneumonia. It was not published of her death at all, and very, very few attended her funeral. Emma would die 9 days later, and they were never married. And they were buried side by side in their family plot, even though they hadn't seen or spoken to each other after 22 years. At Lizzie's death, she was worth over $250,000, which would be $5 million in 2020.
Excuse you. We object to this.
I'm so conflicted. The idea of being prosecuted at all, whether or not you're found guilty, that's enough to stain you. But then to go extra hard because she's a woman that has inherited that much money, I feel like it's so easy to hate her guts regardless. Mm-hmm.
The house is now a bed and breakfast museum with all sorts of evidence that's used in the trial.
You can go stay there.
The housekeeper, Maggie, was never investigated, even though she was the only person to ever admit in testimony of being in the house at the time of both murders. It is well known her father had multiple rivals and enemies, and that anyone could have taken their mistreating upon him and his wife. So you decide, was Lizzie Borden a feminist champion or a deranged, jealous murderer? Did the maid have something to do with it? Did her sister have something to do with it? Her uncle? All of them? Were some of them in on it? Were all of them in on it? You may never know.
I'm so confused why they at the time were like, Maggie, Emma.
I don't understand. Where's Emma? Why is Emma? Why is there no information about where Emma was or what she was doing?
Everyone in this situation is sketch. But to me, the motive makes a lot of sense for the uncle. It makes a lot of sense, the motive behind it. And so then it's like, okay, then what's up with the maid? And I just feel like the maid was paid off. I don't know who paid off the maid, even if it wasn't the uncle, even if it was just somebody else.
See, I think that the maid had something to do with it. I personally think that they were all in on it, all four of them.
I just feel like the person that did the axing, like if we were to go by today's standards, there's a lot to deal with height and force. That doesn't mean that they didn't have somebody else do it for them. Like, that doesn't mean that they weren't involved. I just don't see them doing that much overkill that quickly, that fast, that efficiently. And then getting rid of all of their clothes, you know, washing up. And then, quote unquote, discovering the body.
That's why I think it was multiple people. Yeah. That's exactly why I think it's multiple people. The turnaround is crazy. And also how Maggie didn't see either one of them.
I feel like Maggie was just paid off.
It was reported that she was very ill.
Maggie was ill? Still from the family sickness that everybody had? Yeah. Okay.
And she was napping when Lizzie called her down.
I sleep like the dead. Somebody can yell in the other room and I will not wake up. Thunderstorm shaking the house, I will not wake up.
The only person that was witness to being above the first floor is Maggie.
Yeah.
And the first murder was on the second floor. Lizzie could have been up there.
Yeah.
But it's the time period in between that's strange to me. Andrew gets home. Maggie says Lizzie's upstairs and laughing. She lets her in. And then Maggie testifies that she takes his shoes off. It's a half an hour period of nobody finding Abby or wondering where she's at. And then how Maggie went upstairs to lay down after that incident.
Where the fuck is Emma?
I think the Lizzie laughing part was interesting, that Maggie testified that in court, but that wasn't part of like the initial
interviews,
investigation and interviews.
Feels like unless she caught Abby by surprise.
She was caught here above the ear. Mm-hmm.
So it was like to the side of the head.
I mean, one head blow.
And that's what spun
Yeah, that's true.
Just to
but
knock
it's
her down.
Such overkill, which isn't to say it never happens in women.
A crime of passion in that, fuck you. Of course they have passion. But also with the dad, you have to have the force to take an axe down and chop his eye in half quickly. That's a lot of force for anyone.
Well, that doesn't mean that it was the first blow that the eye was completely severed in half.
I had no idea that the uncle existed, and now...
I didn't either.
I'm very interested in that. It's the day he's here.
And he just so happens to leave, and he was running late, and he went and got oxen, and it's like this whole fucking thing. And I'm just like, that sounds so suspect. Did they go and confirm his alibi? And
goddamn.
And even if they did, he went to go see his niece, allegedly a different niece, so like another sibling's child. That's family, so that's motive to lie too. But I doubt that they even checked out his story. It doesn't feel like they would.
It doesn't sound like they investigated very many people at all. It was very much just like, we got our
who lives here,
Maggie. No, you.
Yeah.
They literally just went straight for Lizzie and, like, just disregarded everybody else.
Also, if she was already on morphine, I really want to know that. If she was just on it afterwards to be calm, or if she was on when this took place.
Right.
She probably wasn't on it before. But
so many people were on it just to exist, and it's, like, in products that are just for sleeping and for this and for that.
Back in the good old days. Get me some original recipe Coke.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I would like my Coca-Cola with a side of cocaine, please.
But also, if this was any of them, Lizzie, Maggie, Emma combined, and they were planning this in any capacity, why would they do it when John is here? Why wouldn't you, okay, we'll murder him next week. We don't need another cog spinning.
I can explain anything away, but it could have been they'll look at him and won't look at us. We'll pretend to be the doting daughters. But if that was the case and it was premeditated, you would think that you would play the grief-stricken daughter and not like, oh, she's so calm. You know, the calm to me says shock, doesn't say I did this. At least not if there's premeditation involved, because then you thought, what do I do after? I would hope that you think, what do I do after if you're taking all this time to plan a crime? How am I going to lie?
People are not good at planning murders.
That's true.
Have you heard our podcast? People are bad at it.
And now, a dramatic reenactment of the testimony of Emma Borden at the trial of Lizzie Borden.
Did your father wear a ring, Miss Emma, upon his finger?
Yes, sir.
Big jump here, me. Why? I was just talking about checks. Was or was not that the only article of jewelry he wore?
The only article.
Do you know from whom he received the ring?
My sister, Lizzie.
How long before his death?
I should think 10 or 15 years.
Do you know whether previously to his wearing it, she had worn it?
Yes, sir.
Did he constantly wear it after it was given to him?
Always.
Do you know whether or not it was upon his finger at the time he was buried?
It was.
I think the ring thing was supposed to be like, oh, you're all saying that Lizzie and her father had a horrible relationship, but Lizzie gave him this ring and he wore it every single day. It was the only piece of jewelry that he wore. And so their relationship couldn't have been as bad as you guys are making it out to be, type of thing. But he never, like, really leans into it aside from just asking. Like, that's what I got for it, at least what I would be doing as the defense attorney.
He's not the defense attorney, right? He's the prosecutor.
Oh. I assumed that he was the defense attorney sheerly from the fact of the ring. It didn't make sense for a prosecuting attorney in my head to ask those questions. It made them sound close. Well.
Was anything said by Miss Russell in the presence of Miss Lizzie in regard to this dress?
Miss Russell came to us in the dining room Monday and said Mr. Hanscom asked her if all the dresses were there the day of that tragedy, and she told him yes, and of course, and said that it is a falsehood. No, I'm ahead of my story. She came and told Mr. Hanscom a falsehood, and I asked her what there was to tell a falsehood about, and then she said that Mr. Hanscom had asked her if that was all the dresses that were there that day of the tragedy, and she told him yes. There was other conversation, but I don't know what it was. That frightened me so thoroughly, I cannot recall it. I know the carriage was waiting for her to go on some errand, and then she came back and we had some conversation, and it was decided to have her go and tell Mr. Hanscom that she had told a falsehood, and to tell him what we told her to do so. She went to the parlor and told him, and in a few minutes she returned from the parlor and said that she had told him. Okay, bitch.
We decided she had to go tell him that she lied.
And just because she works for us doesn't mean anything, okay? It's fine. It's all fine.
That frightened me so thoroughly.
Are you ready to wrap this up?
I could read the whole fucking thing.
I could not. Patrons, comment down below if you want us to do the entire trial. We'll do a cast. We'll set something up. You guys could all play a character. And that'll be our 100th episode live show. It's just us.
I seem to recall you wanted to do something special.
that might be it. Just a reenactment.
I'm playing the neighbor that confirmed that she was seen at 11:03 leaving the barn. And that's the only
one. Just, yes, I saw her.
Yep, that's accurate.
Because that's how long it would take for this.
What an actor!
I object to the judgment. Excluded.
I object. Do you think Lizzie Borden was guilty or innocent? If you think she was innocent, who do you think committed the murders? Or do you think it was a group effort? We want to know. Let us know. Tell us in the comments. Email us. Call the tip line. 313-355-3411. You guys know the deal.
I've got an insider tip about the Lizzie Borden case.
Until next time, I'm Mo.
I'm Chip.
And I'm the Blood Countess.
Okay, bye.
Okay.
You just listened to the Deep Dark Truth podcast. See you next time. And remember, your local cryptids want to meet you.